change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. Very happy today to be speaking with Laura McDonald. Laura is the principal and founder of the Benefactor Group. How are you, Laura?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And what is the Benefactor Group? Let's talk about that real quick before we get on to the meat of our discussion today.
Sure. We're a full-service consulting firm that works with nonprofit organizations, often around areas of fundraising and philanthropy, building their capacity for annual fundraising or helping to prepare them to implement an ambitious capital campaign. We also do work in nonprofit technology and search and talent management and strategic planning.
Got it. The thing we're going to talk about today is GivingUSA. What is your role with GivingUSA?
I have the privilege right now as serving as the board chair of the GivingUSA Foundation. We publish GivingUSA working in partnership with the research team at the Lilly Family School of Philanthropy at Indiana University.
And how long has GivingUSA been in action?
I believe that this was the 66th annual report on the sources and uses of giving in America.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And that's much of its value is that it is this incredible longitudinal data set that really begins to allow you to discern trends and tease out information that's useful in your day-to-day fundraising life.
And the annual publication is coming out in a few weeks, I think, right?
The data was released on June 15th.
Oh, okay.
It's now available. But what we've found is that the sources of data have become more and more delayed. And so the actual book, it takes a long time to write and lay out and proofread the 400-page book. And so the book itself will become available, I believe, within the next few days. And folks can go to the store at the GivingUSA website. And what I would suggest is that you take advantage of our new subscription model rather than just buying the book. A subscription will give you access to all of the back catalog plus special reports as they come out, etc.
But let's lay this clear for a lot of people, because I'm ashamed to say that I've heard of the book before, but I've never really delved into it with any serious intent. So there's an education that's about to happen for me here. What am I going to find in the book?
Mickey, you haven't read all 400 pages of the book?
I'm sorry. I get a slap on the wrist. I haven't done my homework.
It is a rich source of information. We often liken it to an almanac. And so at the top line, you have the data. Now, the data is available on the website free of charge, the top line data that talks about the sources of giving and the sectors that received that giving. And, mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, for 2020, we estimated that charitable giving was $471 billion.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's larger than the economy of major Scandinavian countries. That's right. It's more than the count of trees in the Amazon. We did this one year as a team, tried to equate more than 400 billion.
Right.
So the book itself, then, there will be some initial chapters that will provide just a summary of the numbers, who gave, who received, looks at some one-year and two-year trends, five-year trends, actually goes back 40 years. So looks at just an overview of the data. The chapter, I think, is called The Numbers. Beyond that, then, there is a chapter on each source. So a chapter on giving by individuals, by bequest, from foundations, from corporations. And each of those chapters is rich with anecdotes and examples, but also citations of other research. So if you really, want to delve into it more deeply, you'll see notes about other research. And then because our methodology is completely transparent, you can also see at the back of each chapter the notes and go right to that. In fact, I did this earlier today. I was looking at some research that Candid put out because I wanted to better understand the special chapter this year on giving during COVID. So there's a special chapter that talks specifically about how COVID affected charitable giving overall.
Yep.
And then there are 9 chapters on the recipients of giving. So giving to religion, giving to education, human services, giving to foundations, public society benefit. And I know the next question is, what the heck is that? I'll answer that in a minute. There's a chapter on each recipient sector. So for example, if you're a development officer working in healthcare, I would encourage you to certainly read the chapter about giving to health.
Okay.
And it will cite other data sources like the AHP studies, et cetera, or the folks who study children's hospitals. And then I'd also encourage you to read the four chapters on the sources of giving. Mm-hmm. Frankly, giving by individuals, I think, is probably the key chapter every year in the book, since we know that individuals account for almost 70% of all charitable giving.
Yep.
So I think that that's an important one to read and understand. So that's really what the book is comprised of. As I say, it's each chapter is a bit of a overview of what happened in philanthropy in that sector, using the data from the report as a springboard.
Can you say that the 2020 book is wholly affected by COVID? Like, are the numbers that we're seeing in 2020 completely and totally just overshadowed by the impact of COVID?
Well, I think that there are three related factors that really had a significant impact on charitable giving, and three factors that will never be repeated in this way ever again, one would assume. I guess lightning can strike twice, but...
No, let's hope not. Yeah.
Exactly. So first there was the global pandemic, and then there's the economy, and then finally the racial reckoning.
Ah.
All three had an impact on philanthropy. So certainly the global pandemic and the need, both health needs, food insecurity, housing insecurity that arose from that and that resulted in an outpouring of charitable giving. So you've got that. But then also the economic turmoil that the pandemic created, with the markets losing 40% of their value in late March, early April,
right,
only recover and grow 16% by the end of the year, with the unemployment rate being the highest we've ever seen it. But then we had this economic stimulus with the CARES Act. And frankly, the economic stimulus of the CARES Act, which kept GDP from falling even further than it did, and which actually led to an increase in disposable personal income at the household level. Also, you know, those had a greater impact on what happened to philanthropy than the $300 universal charitable deduction, which you can tell I'm not real impressed with the $300. I would love to see a meaningful universal charitable deduction. That's me speaking personally.
Thank you. Yes.
So those, and then there was this conversation about diversity and equity and inclusion. And frankly, if one of those factors, I think of those three factors, the one that will have the long-term impact on philanthropy is the last one, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and expectations amongst donors of what nonprofit organizations will do to be relevant in that moment, expectations amongst nonprofits about how they'll converse with donors. You know, I think related to all of this, we saw that amazing generosity from Mackenzie Scott towards the end of the year. So overall, giving by individuals grew by $7 billion. Mackenzie Scott on her own gave more than $5 billion. So you can do the math. I don't need to tell you what's going on there.
Right.
What was remarkable was this notion of trust-based philanthropy, where the gifts were almost entirely unrestricted without expectation of follow-up reports. And so I think this call for equity in funding nonprofit organizations, donors' expectations that nonprofit organizations will be relevant in this national conversation that we're having, regardless of your sector, arts and culture, environment, whatever.
Right.
And the way that Ms. Scott has modeled her philanthropy, I think all of those are going to have a longer term impact than what we hope is a one-time rolling natural disaster of this global pandemic and the economic turmoil it created.
You know, I can't help it. Being the data nerd that I am, I'm already curious to see what 2021 will look like in comparison to 2020.
Absolutely.
You know, the overall shape of the fundraising pie has not really substantially changed. The biggest piece still comes from individuals. All the smaller pieces are, you know, bequests, corporations, government. Well, I don't know if government's included in your
foundations.
Yeah, foundations. Yeah, right. So you said a second ago that we should revisit the notion of public society benefit. What does that mean?
So it is one of the recipient sectors. And the others are fairly straightforward. Education. Okay, that's everything from pre-K through lifelong learning, but it's education. I can get my head around that. Health. I can get my head around that. Public society benefit is a bit of a catch-all category. So on the one hand, it's these sort of congregate campaigns like United Way or United Jewish Appeal. It's also organizations that advocate for things like voting rights or immigrant rights. So a lot of public advocacy groups in that space. And then finally, it includes national donor advised funds. So it's some seemingly unrelated organizations. This all goes on something called NTEE codes. Mm-hmm. And so they've all been lumped together. And what we've found recently is that, you know, the rising of giving to donor advised funds at the same time that we saw in many communities, United Ways were struggling. You know, we had these two opposing factors in that sector. But in 2020, what we saw is that, yes, people continued to give to and from their donor advised funds, But in addition to that, you know, a lot of United Ways did a great job of standing up in their communities and putting on special campaigns, special days of giving. And so, right. you know, having after having been a drag perhaps on that sector for a while, all of a sudden they were contributing to it as well. And so at the end of the day, we saw a 15.7% increase in that in giving to that sector. Pretty remarkable.
That is remarkable. That's a huge jump. I'm kind of surprised. Or I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm kind of surprised.
Here's what'll surprise you more.
Yeah.
Giving to health declined 3%.
Which makes, it seems so counterintuitive, right? It's like, how does, with a rolling pandemic at your back every day, how do you figure that happened?
Two things to keep in mind.
Yeah.
One is that when, I'm not sure that this is entirely the accurate description, but when Dolly Parton gave $1 million to vaccine research, she probably gave that to someplace like Vanderbilt Medical Center, which is academic. Academic healthcare is counted in giving to education. So it's one of the reasons why giving to education grew is because a lot of the vaccine research and the gifts to support vaccine research were happening at academic medicine. Another big part of that sector is, for example, the national organizations that try to address a single disease or chronic health issue, mm-hmm. the Cancer Society, the lymphoma. And many of those have become dependent on this sort of run, walk, ride fundraising model.
Oh, yes.
Those things didn't happen in 2020. Some organizations were able to pivot successfully to a virtual option, but really most of them didn't raise anywhere near as much money as they raised in 18 or 19.
Right.
And so you're right. Your first thought is there's a global health crisis and giving to health declined, but that's why it declined.
It's just an amazing collection of data. And I can't wait to get my copy and catch up on my homework. So what else surprised you about 2020?
I was heartened to see the increase in giving because we know that there's a strong correlation between GDP and charitable giving. And, you know, by the end of the year, GDP declined. It didn't decline quite as much as the World Bank said that it might, but it did, I think it declined around 6%. So for a long time, we've been tracking charitable giving as a percent of GDP, because that really begins to show us, are we moving the needle? And for a long time, it's been stuck at around 2.2% of GDP. Charitable giving in America is about 2% of our GDP. Well, this year it went up. It went up to 2.3% of GDP. Now, it went up for the wrong reason. It went up because the GDP went down more than giving went up. But at least it shows that there's some elasticity in that space, and that imagine if we were in a growing economy and we could give it 2.3% of GDP. So that's one. But knowing the strong headwind that the decline in GDP would create, I was heartened to see the growth in overall charitable giving. I was not surprised, but disappointed. I'm personally a consumer of arts, culture, and humanities. It's a sector that we do a lot of work in. We believe strongly in the power of the sector to heal and unify and inform and inspire and do all of those things that our society needs right now. And yet giving to that sector declined 7.5%.
Yeah, that also surprises me. I saw a meme, good old-fashioned meme, which means nothing, but it said that if you still have your sanity as we're exiting pandemic, thank your actors, thank your artists, thank your entertainers. And on the other hand, I mean, I do get it. There's a whole lot more that added to our survival of pandemic, but it's true. If it weren't for those distractions, I'm sure a lot of us would have been in much poorer mental health as a result. And yet,
absolutely.
And yet we see a decrease in giving to those sectors. So,
well, a couple of things so I went back and dug into this more deeply, knowing that our clients would have questions about that. During the Great Recession, giving to arts, culture, and humanities declined 17.5% and came back strong. That this is a sector that tends to be particularly sensitive to the ups and downs of the economy. The other thing that I know from our experience that many of the kinds of organizations that might have been doing capital campaigns for a new performing arts hall or a new gallery for the museum, you know, I think many of them stood back. First of all, they asked, is this was designed for a pre-COVID, pre-racial reckoning community? Is it what we need in the future? So they're maybe re-engineering their plans. But in addition to that, you know, you can imagine that donors did not necessarily feel that 2020 was the year to announce their $100 million gift to the arts.
Right.
So, you know, and so I'm hopeful that philanthropic support for arts and culture and humanities will come back as it has after past economic disruptions.
Yeah, me too. We're almost out of time. I'm looking at the page. I'm looking forward to ordering my own copy. You're saying again that the annual subscription is better than the hard copy?
Yeah, just because I think it's not that much more, if any more, and you'll get access to all of this other data that will be of value to you. In addition to that, and I strongly encourage you to go there and order that. And I don't want this to come across as promotional or not, but our firm takes the whole 400-page book and boils it down to a one-page infographic. So citing lots of data sources, not just giving USA, it's kind of a fun thing for our team to do each year. So, and if folks would be interested in that, where you can download it from our website at benefactorgroup.com.
Right. I'll be sure to include that link in our show notes so that folks can go to Benefactor Group and get the infographic, which is a pretty cool illustration of everything. Of course, not nearly as granular and fulfilling as the 400-page book, which in my mind, this is something that every development officer should have.
Oh, yeah.
At the very least, to look at forecasting for 2021, 2022. And yeah, like I said, I can't wait to get my copy.
The full data tables are in the book. So you can look at your sector and say, okay, what happened in my sector after past disruptions? What happened after the Great Recession? What happened after 9/11? And to your point, if you want to do some thoughtful trend forecasting for what your charitable revenue is going to be for FY22 or calendar year 22, those data tables are a rich source of trend data.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're almost out of time. So any parting words of wisdom or final thoughts for our audience before we say goodbye today?
I applaud all of my fellow practitioners who want to have a data-driven and informed view of philanthropy and as they think about what's around the corner. The other thing I'll say is that much of Giving USA, the top line number is driven by those big gifts like Mackenzie Scott, enormously generous. In addition to that, in order to have a healthy charitable economy, we all need to pay attention to the everyday households. There's some evidence that the percentage of American households that give increased in 2020 mm-hmm. because people saw the need. And it would be great if we treated every donor with respect and kept them informed and engaged so that we can retain more of them. That's what's going to lead to growth and to a healthy charitable giving economy.
Yep, absolutely. Laura McDonald, thank you for making the time to do this with me today. If a listener had more questions for you about your work with the Benefactor Group or for Giving USA work in general, how would you suggest they get in touch?
Again, go to the website. There's a link to my email there on the website, and or there's a place where you can fill out some information and send a request into my office. Those always find their way to me. And I think that's probably the easiest right now. And as you can tell, I love talking about Giving USA. So please send me your questions about that. And I'm also happy to talk about the work that Benefactor Group does.
Fantastic. Again, thanks for making the time, Laura. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for your good work.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.